It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon and welcome to the broadcast. We'll start today remembering a passing. Christian apologist Ravi Zacharias died today. The Indian-born Canadian-American passed away after a two-month battle with cancer. Back in March, Zacharias announced he had incurable cancer of the bones and soft tissue. And just last week, former NFL quarterback Tim Tebow posted an emotional video about how Zacharias impacted his life.
So I think it's really important in life to have heroes, and especially in the faith. And one of my heroes of the faith is a man named Ravi Zacharias.
That man named Ravi Zacharias died at the age of 74 after a half century of ministry. The reopening of America is underway from coast to coast, the country beginning to recover from coronavirus.
With every state except Connecticut now at least partially reopened, different parts of the country are moving towards a new normal at strikingly different paces. In Washington State, the sights and sounds of newly reopened tribal casinos, while strobe lights pulse in Oklahoma, where nightclubs are now back online.
It's been so boring and quarantine and stuff, so we're ready to be back.
I personally, based on the data, feel like it's too soon.
In Texas, a green light for gyms, offices, and even bars in limited capacity.
We've removed half our chairs and the bar half the tables.
And Illinois reports its biggest drop in deaths in 2 weeks, prompting this call to worship.
You're going to go to Walmart, Target today? Let's go to church today.
Caution, relief, and defiance as America comes back online.
Correspondent Sam Brock, Massachusetts, one of the last states to come back online. In Boston, this bar owner near Fenway Park says normal is a long way off.
Everyone wants to do what we like to do, but we just need to do it a little differently now.
Connecticut's stay-at-home order expires tomorrow, and once it does, all 50 states will be back in business in one way or another for the upcoming Memorial Day weekend. President Trump is taking on the WHO. He's threatening to permanently pull funding to the World Health Organization if it doesn't improve its coronavirus response.
The president claims the WHO ignored early reports about the coronavirus spreading in Wuhan, China. He also accuses them of making inaccurate and misleading claims about the virus, and he alleges the WHO gave preferential treatment to China.
Nicole Killian, with that report, the president is raising some eyebrows by admitting he's on the drug hydroxychloroquine to protect him against COVID-19.
It's been around for 40 years for malaria, for lupus, for other things. I take it. Frontline workers take it. A lot of doctors take it.
But many doctors say the drug's dangerous. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
He's our president, and I would rather he not be taking something that has not been approved by the scientists, especially in his age group.
A Democrat from Michigan says the drug saved her life. The president's been taking it for a week and a half. Federal authorities issuing new guidelines for the reopening of nursing homes.
The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services is urging the nation's governors to go slow on deciding when to allow a resumption of visits at nursing homes. The guidance says nursing home visits should not resume before all residents and staff have tested negative for COVID-19 for at least 28 days. In an interview with the Associated Press, CMS Director Seema Verma said, "We're urging governors to proceed with extreme caution because these are the most vulnerable citizens." According to an AP count, outbreaks in nursing homes and long-term facilities have claimed more than 32,000 lives in the United States. That accounts for more than a third of all coronavirus deaths in the U.S. Mike Gracia, Washington.
The Oregon Supreme Court striking down a lower court ruling on religious liberty in the age of coronavirus. 10 churches in Oregon sued, arguing that social distancing was a violation of their constitutional rights. The state's highest court disagreed. In the name of public safety, it disagreed. A New Jersey gymnasium has defied a state order to remain shut down in the midst of the pandemic. Listen to what happened yesterday when cops showed up outside that gym to enforce the rule of law.
Formally, you are all in violation of the executive order. On that note, have a good day. Everybody be safe.
Those cops refusing to arrest anybody. Brian Kilmeade of Fox and Friends.
It's been 2 months, and do the people of New Jersey have a right to make their own decisions on what's in their best interest, or is the governor their parent to decide what is right and wrong?
The gym owner says his equipment is spaced out and disinfected to protect patrons. He claims his 14th Amendment rights are violated with the governor's lockdown.
This is far bigger than just one small business opening up. We said it from the get-go that this was about sort of a gross violation of our constitutional rights, and that this is for all small businesses. You know, we are all hurting in this time.
The gym owner cited for disorderly conduct, he faces a $2,000 fine and 6 months behind bars. Still to come, area churches gearing up for reopening. Ithaca College plans to welcome back students, and we'll tell you about a train derailment last night near Buffalo.
Well, very good afternoon to all. A rather serene weather scene shaping up not only for today, but the rest of the week. I'll be back with the complete forecast coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin, great to have you back. Thank you very much. A Pennsylvania politician has had it with Democratic Governor Tom Wolf.
I think we need to impeach this man.
That's Butler County Republican Representative Daryl Metcalf, and he will not concede that the governor's stay-at-home orders have flattened the curve and saved lives.
No, I don't concede that they've done anything except for destroy the economy and do irreparable harm to the lives of so many Pennsylvanians through Wolf's dictates. He's harmed more people than the virus has.
Western New York opened for business, at least partly, and professional sports could be coming back soon in the Empire State. More on that from Family Life's Bill Price.
Governor Cuomo made the announcement yesterday at Roswell Park in Buffalo.
So that's exciting, and it's been a long, painful period, but we start to reopen.
Governor Cuomo says the region has met the metrics to enter phase one of his four-phase reopening plan. He also says professional sports teams can start to reopen without any fans.
And then they'll be up and running, and then when we can fill a stadium again, we can fill a stadium. But why wait until you can fill a stadium before you start to bring the team back?
With Western New York now reopened, it leaves just the Hudson Valley, New York City, and Long Island as the only areas of the Empire State that are still closed. Bill Price, Family Life News.
Thank you, Bill. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf says NASCAR could hold races at the Pocono Speedway in late June if the coronavirus situation improves by then. Those races, though, would happen without fans. Here's Family Life's Terry Diener.
Pocono Raceway is in Monroe County, which currently is under Wolf's strictest pandemic orders. But Wolf said that if Monroe County moves to yellow before the races, then NASCAR may hold the two races as long as there's no spectators present and guidelines are followed to keep competitors safe. In all, Pocono is set to host 5 races over 4 days, along with practices and qualifying beginning June the 25th. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Check this out. New York State has paid out 4 years' worth of unemployment benefits in just 2 months. Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
The New York State Department of Labor announced that it has paid more than $9 billion in jobless benefits since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, that includes $290 million in back pay through a new process that allows New Yorkers to more easily submit necessary certifications. The Department of Labor says nearly 180,000 New Yorkers are taking advantage of the new system. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Area churches making plans for when they'll get to resume in-person services. Jeremy Cramner is a pastor in Elmira.
One thing that we talked about, no matter what the number is that we're given, we could start with, whether it's 50 and below, whatever it may be, we want to be able to shoot for every other pew seating. Sit with your family. If you're not with that family group, sit 6 feet from them on the same pew.
In Tioga County, Pennsylvania, Pastor Steve Neff held his first in-person service this past Sunday. He hopes from this pandemic, people will learn to appreciate the privilege of going to church.
It wasn't always that we met every Sunday. Historically, religion and religious people would often only meet at feast times and so forth. To meet every Sunday is a great privilege, and it's a great freedom, and to have it taken away is a great challenge for us.
Larger congregations may not be able to assemble again until well into summer. A new state mandate in New York requires all nursing homes test test their staff twice a week for the virus. Steuben County Manager Jack Wheeler.
We've done 3,700 tests since the beginning of this pandemic. So we're talking about a huge surge, and we're hearing from our partners at local labs and also the state labs that capacity is a huge issue. So we are concerned. We're concerned that these staff members who get tested twice a week might go a week or more before they even get their first test result back.
New York State dispersed more than 300,000 COVID-19 test kits to nursing homes this week. Ithaca College announcing plans to open for on-campus classes this fall. President Shirley Collado.
I am thrilled to share with our faculty, staff, and students and families that Ithaca College has selected a date, Monday, October 5th, to reopen our campus again officially and start a new academic year.
She says the school will continue to carefully align with state guidelines and work closely with community partners as Ithaca emerges from COVID-19. High school graduations have a new look in the COVID-19 era.
It's actually a rite of passage. I mean, every kid looks forward to graduation.
In Pennsylvania, the Elizabethtown Area School District welcoming graduating seniors one by one, and that will happen at the fairgrounds, walking across the stage as their families watch. Graduate Ethan Laun appreciates the effort.
The setup they have in here, it's incredible, and I really appreciate that. We are still able to walk across the stage, still able to get our diplomas, and it just means a lot.
His parents also grateful that they can take part in the commencement exercise.
It's a blessing. You know, we're just honored to be here. Ethan's worked really hard to be here, so we're just really thankful that we have a ceremony.
While untraditional, Ethan says it will be a memorable milestone.
It is special because it's one of a kind, so I definitely am loving the experience.
The district will film each student graduating and plans to show the ceremony on their YouTube page next month. A body found near the Susquehanna River in Owego, New York, has been positively ID'd as a Binghamton University professor who was reported missing last month. The family of Dominic Davey, issuing a statement last night on the Facebook page that was created to help find the 30-year-old. The Endicott man went missing in early April. Police do not suspect foul play. Davey leaves behind a wife and two young boys. Well, last night, a train derailed in East Aurora just outside of Buffalo. 15 of the 98 cars on the train leapt the track. That train was on its way from Salamanca to Buffalo.
The only fluid leaking from the train right now was diesel fuel from the engine. That was completely off the track.
East Aurora Police Chief Shane Krieger, no injuries reported. 30 homes were evacuated as a safety precaution. Sports up next, the two-minute drill. Here's Sonny.
Thank you, Bob. Yeah, as you mentioned earlier, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo encouraging the state's major sports teams to plan to reopen without fans.
I want to watch the Buffalo Bills, but I'm still objective. I'm acting as governor. There's no personal agenda here. Yes, I do want to watch the Bills.
He says hockey, basketball, baseball, football, whoever can reopen, we are a ready, willing, and able partner. Cuomo added, it's in the best interests of the people and the state. California Governor Gavin Newsom announced that professional sports events can resume in his state without spectators as soon as early June if the downward trend of coronavirus cases continues. Florida and Arizona have also done so within the past week. NBA Hall of Famer Magic Johnson said his life insurance company will lend small businesses $100 million through a federal coronavirus relief program.
We're going to come together, and NBE is going to make sure they vet these minority firms and women-owned businesses along with the SBA to make sure these companies get money, because they've been a pillar and also they've been outstanding for our community.
That was Magic on Good Morning America. An attorney for Giants cornerback DeAndre Baker said the case against his client will go away. Patrick Patel tells the Post that the charges will soon be dropped and the case dismissed. Baker and Seattle cornerback Quentin Dunbar accused of robbing party guests of money and valuables. Is Big Ben back?
I'm not going to shave or cut my hair until I can throw football again.
The Pittsburgh Steeler quarterback had a meeting with the shears to trim down his Grizzly Adams beard after throwing with James Conner, Ryan Switzer, and Juju Smith-Schuster at Quaker Valley High School in a video released by the team on Monday. And Starling Marte is mourning the loss of his wife after she suffered a sudden heart attack. Noelia was in a hospital awaiting surgery on a broken ankle when she died, according to the Major League Baseball Network. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolfiette.
All right, Sonny, thank you. Still to come on the Noon Report, we're celebrating 100 years of radio, the 600-mile haircut, and we'll talk to a healthcare worker on the front lines of the COVID fight.
Even in the midst of global chaos, God is still using his people in this nation and around the world to love and serve others. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Last week, 40-year-old Joyce Lynn, an American missionary with Mission Aviation Fellowship, lost her life when the plane that she was flying crashed. Lynn was taking COVID-19 medical supplies to a remote Indonesian village. The region where she was flying is a notoriously difficult place to navigate, but Lynn went in anyway. As her colleagues attested, her great joy was serving the Lord by serving others. Lynn joins generations of missionaries who've committed their lives to taking their faith to people in other cultures. And yet that is a task of every Christian, not just missionaries. We too are called to live out our faith in the middle of this culture, in our communities where we work, seeing every area of life and every culture as a mission field to which we are called. Well, part of being equipped in this calling is understanding and articulating a distinctly Christian worldview. This involves not only knowing what the Bible says, but thinking biblically about all of life. Years ago, Chuck Colson described what this means.
While we have to be immersed in Scripture and understand it fully, we also have to know when and how to use it in public discourse. Let me give you an example. G.K. Chesterton, the famous British writer, was once invited to a meeting of the leading intellectuals in England. They were asked if they were shipwrecked on an island, what would be the one book they would want to have with them. Everybody expected Chesterton, a prominent Christian, to say the Bible. When it came his turn to speak, however, Chesterton said that if he was shipwrecked on a desert island, he'd like to have Thomas's Guide to Practical Shipbuilding. Well, the point is that oftentimes we need to understand things that aren't covered in the Bible, and we need to understand things that help us apply biblical teaching to all of life. This is why I teach biblical worldview. A man once told Oswald Chambers that he read only the Bible. Listen to what Chambers said. My strong advice to you is to soak in philosophy and psychology until you know more of these subjects than ever you need consciously to think. It's ignorance of these subjects on the part of ministers and workers that has brought our evangelical theology to such a sorry plight. The man who reads only the Bible does not, as a rule, know it or human life. And when it comes to making a biblical case on any hot topic, taxes, the deficit, homosexuality, whatever, we need to understand the issue and how to make that case in a way that is accessible to believers and non-believers alike. This is why we've got to study biblical worldview to compare how the Bible works out in life versus how other systems of thought do. I assure you, you will see that the biblical way is the only way to make sense of the world, to live rationally in the world, and eventually your friends will see this as well.
That vision of an applied faith led Chuck Colson to launch an exclusive 10-month training program for Christians that we now call Colson Fellows. Today, that program has grown dramatically. Communities of Christians in 40 local cohorts are online studying together Christian worldview, apologetics, cultural renewal, and leadership. Colson Fellows read through a carefully curated list of books, articles, and commentaries. They learn from top Christian leaders, and ultimately, they craft a 3-year plan to help them live out what they've learned. Look, the call of Christ in our lives to join him in his work in the world is the same across cultures and across eras. What that call looks like will differ for people and for communities. If your heart's being tugged to prepare for the kind of life that Chuck described, we're taking applications right now for our next class of Colson Fellows. Learn more at colsonfellows.org. That's colsonfellows.org. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Kevin's back and weather's next on Family Life.
Here is your Family Life weather forecast. The call for this afternoon will share the skies with clouds and sun and temperatures that'll peak in the 60s to near 70. Tonight, partly cloudy with low temps in the 40s and sunshine prevails. Tomorrow and Thursday, still a few mixed clouds at times in parts of Pennsylvania, but it'll be warming up slowly over time. A high tomorrow, 60s to near 70. We're in the mid-60s to the low 70s then on Thursday.
All right, Kevin, thank you kindly. This is the Noon Report, and here's what's happening this Tuesday afternoon, May the 19th. Christian apologist Ravi Zacharias died today, a couple of months after being diagnosed with incurable cancer. The popular author and Christian teacher preached in more than 70 countries and authored more than 30 books in his near half-century career. Zacharias was born in India and became a Christian in the hospital. After a failed suicide attempt as a teenager, he survived by his wife, Margaret, and their three children. Ravi Zacharias was 74. President Trump is on the anti-malaria drug hydroxychloroquine, and it's got a lot of people talking. Correspondent Stephen Portnoy.
The president revealed it matter-of-factly.
The frontline workers, many, many are taking it. I happen to be taking it.
Mr. Trump says he's on hydroxychloroquine and zinc.
I take a pill every day.
He says he continues testing negative for coronavirus, and he shrugs off potential negative health consequences.
I've taken it for about a week and a half now. I'm still here.
The president threatening to pull the purse strings at the World Health Organization because of its posturing during this pandemic. Here's correspondent Steve Futterman.
In a strongly worded letter, the president threatened to make the freeze permanent if the WHO fails to make significant changes. In comments yesterday, Mr. Trump again was critical of the organization.
I think they've done a very sad job in the last period of time.
And his focus once more was on China.
The United States pays them $450 million a year. China pays them $38 million a year. And they're a puppet of China.
The WHO special envoy, Dr. David Nabarro, calls Mr. Trump's timing unfortunate.
Doesn't add up. Right in the middle of something that's affecting 7.8 billion people.
And today, China accused the U.S. of trying to shift the blame due to its own mishandling of the crisis.
Buffalo back in business. Western New York reopened today. The governor says that's exciting news.
It's been a long, painful period, but we start to reopen.
He also announced the return of professional sports in the Empire State, absent the fans, of course. Well, Pennsylvania's governor, Tom Wolf, is throwing sand at states that have reopened their beaches.
I wouldn't go to the beach. There are people there who aren't wearing masks, and you're putting yourself at risk.
He scoffed after reporters showed pictures of crowded beaches in neighboring states.
I'm not sure why the governors of Maryland and New Jersey have opened their beaches, but they have.
Many complain the governor is moving too slowly and too secretly at reopening Pennsylvania. Chicago churches are being punished for violating stay-at-home orders. Mayor Lori Lightfoot says the city will fine churches that held services over the weekend.
There were some churches that congregated in excess of the allowable number, and we will be taking action as to those individuals in those churches.
Notre Dame University in South Bend, Indiana, one of the first major schools to announce plans to reopen soon.
Fall semester at Notre Dame will begin on August 10th, as this is 2 weeks earlier than originally scheduled. The university will then skip a fall break and end the semester before Thanksgiving. Programming is canceled for the rest of the summer, with the exception of a small number of students.
That's WSBT-TV's Todd Connor. A waterfront restaurant in Maryland is taking a unique approach at social distancing. Its tables are giant inner tubes on wheels. Imagine that. Customer stands in the middle and is forced to be 6 feet away from anyone else. The owner said he came up with this idea just to make us smile. We all need a good laugh now and then. Well, next at noon, marking 100 years of radio.
Celebrating a century of sound.
This is KDKA.
After Pittsburgh's KDKA began broadcasting regularly in 1920, people started listening regularly, and business people suddenly realized they had something with this new radio thing. If one station could get an audience, how about many stations? And so began the networks.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
NBC was the first in 1926.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The roots of CBS trace back to 1927. The Mutual Broadcasting System was born in 1934.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
ABC was formed in 1943.
This is Jack Benny talking.
In the 1930s, you could hear everything from comedian Jack Benny to Herb Morrison broadcasting the explosion of the airship, the Hindenburg.
Oh, the humanity.
To Franklin Roosevelt and his fireside chats.
I want to talk for a few minutes with the people of the United States about banking.
People watch the radio like we watch TV, and the country was united in a brand new way. I'm Sam Litzinger.
Fascinating. Thank you, Sam. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes on Family Life. I'm your host, Bill Price. Our guest this week, Doug Justum from Jamestown, New York. He's on the front lines of the COVID-19 fight. What have you seen personally with this virus and the response to it?
What I've seen personally for the COVID is it's kind of different because you see a lot of what you consider is going to be COVID, and so you have to take precautions and things like that. Then you've got those that you don't know. It's like the unseen enemy, as was mentioned, where you think people are healthy. Maybe they came in with a broken finger or some totally unrelated issue. And then as they're in the hospital, you start to see the symptoms that are described.
Do you feel, and you would know this more than most, do you fear that they are labeling a lot of these cases as COVID that aren't?
It's hard to say, only because we know that the testing procedure is not 100%. We would have been convinced that a lot of what we were seeing back in December and January was COVID, because they were very much like the COVID cases that you see. We all thought this from the very beginning, and now the governor even said it here in the past week or two that, it's been around a lot longer than anybody thought.
When you go through crisis, whether it be 9/11 or, in World War II, the nation kind of came together, pitched in, helped out. It seems there is this rallying cry every time crisis unfolds and a microscopic organism has pretty much shut down not just the U.S., but the entire world. Can you talk, Doug, about how we as a society just we come together in times of crisis with donating things, whether it be ventilators, face masks, protective gear, stuff that we're seeing now? If there is one silver lining in all of this, it's the nation's response to this crisis.
Absolutely. And we all knew coming into this, there's going to be something good coming out of this. And it just kind of goes back to, whenever they were, the astronauts were going up all the time. And there were so many things came out of the space program, even though it didn't make any sense at the time for a lot of people and why we were doing this. So kind of in the same respect here, it's one of those things where the nation is just kind of gathering the good. They're gleaning what good they can out of this. They're recognizing, and I don't want to say the heroes because I never consider myself a hero, but they recognize the people that are really on the front lines and dealing with maybe more stress than other ones. So there's a lot of people recognizing it, and it's not just healthcare workers. They're recognizing the people that are working in the grocery stores or the gas station or wherever else, delivery people getting their packages and their mail. It's kind of nice to see the nation recognizing people that really are putting themselves out there. They've got a job to do, and they decide, every morning I'm deciding whether or not I'm going to go to work today.
Yeah.
And these people are doing it.
Well, the big question now is, when do we get back to normal, or at least some sense of what we were before? And there's those who think that we should just kind of stay at home and wait this thing out some more. Others feel that it's time, it's go time, that we can hide in our homes forever. And this is here, the virus is here. We've got to learn to adapt and to live with it. Do you have any opinions, Doug, as far as when we can and when we should get back to normal?
Things do have to get back. People have to start meeting face-to-face and things like that. And I just saw, I'm from Pittsburgh, and so I just saw where UPMC is saying, it's time to get life moving again here. It's not that everybody takes the masks off and goes back to 100%, but, they realize that you just can't live in a bubble.
Yeah.
So it's time to get back to real life.
That's Jamestown, New York's Doug Justum, this week's Hometown Hero. Join us next week as we search for your home, your town, your hero. It's Hometown Heroes on Family Life.
All right, Bill, thank you very much. Hometown Heroes comes your way every Tuesday during the Noon Report, or you can catch it online anytime, fln.org/podcast.
Here is your Family Life weather forecast. The call for this afternoon will share the skies with clouds and sun and temperatures that will peak in the 60s to near 70. Tonight, partly cloudy with low temps in the 40s, and sunshine prevails tomorrow and Thursday. Still a few mixed clouds at times in parts of Pennsylvania, but it'll be warming up slowly over time. A high tomorrow, 60s to near 70. We're in the mid-60s to the low 70s then on Thursday.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much at the Weather Center. And finally from us at noon today, the 600-mile haircut. Family Life's Brandon Dixon explains.
A man in Washington State wanted a trim so badly, he drove more than 600 miles to get one in California. Jay Farr saw a friend from his hometown of Yuba City, California, post online about going to the barber shop. With so many barbers and salons shut down where Farr lives in Washington State, he decided the drive was worth it. Farr told a local newspaper it's encouraging to know there are other people in the world who are not going to, quote, sit inside in fear. The barbershop owner says he's been extremely busy since his county is one of the few in California that's allowed to reopen in limited capacity. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
All right, Brandon, thank you for that. And that's the world we live in, Tuesday, May 19th. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.